You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines. We made it through bottling, everybody. It's official. I am now 24 hours, almost to the minute, removed from our bottling run yesterday. As I'm recording this, it's July 29th, Tuesday. We were bottling on Monday. We did end up missing last week's show. I apologize. I got sick last week, which was perfect timing to do, you know, 10 to 14 hour days of manual labor and get ready for bottling and try and put blends together and taste stuff. So this is the first day I've been without like meds and sniffling and running around. It's just been, man, it has been a rough like 5 days, but we made it through. We're on the other side. It's lovely now. We got all kinds of stuff to catch up on as a result. Last week, we're going to dive into this bottling run. We're going to do that real quickly to kind of kick off the show here. We got a bunch, and I mean a bunch of comments from our previous episode regarding kind of winery marketing and then winery experience woes from a couple weeks ago. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we're going to kind of dive back into today. Before we do, and I got a lot of new topics as well. I've got a laundry list of stuff to dive into. So it's going to be a couple of good episodes coming up. Very excited. As usual, couple quick announcements. Be sure to follow us on our social networks at MTGA Wines. You can watch the podcast here and watch me dance around my office on YouTube. You can check out us on Instagram, where we probably are the most active. The social network formerly known as Twitter is also the Book of Face. Again, that's at MTJ Wines. Head to our website, mtjwines.com. You can sign up for our newsletter, check out our wine club, find out more about us, our wines, all kinds of fun stuff on there. Please be 21 years of age or older. Also, we have some events that are coming up. Be sure to check out the upcoming events while you're on the website. The HBIC is heading to Chicago in just a couple of weeks. Two events are sold out. We still have some space on August 14th, I believe, in Chicago. So be sure to check that out. We are also planning a trip to Denver this fall. We're going to be in Texas for a good stretch in November. Once we get through harvest, there's going to be a lot more stuff popping up. So we'll be sure to get those events up and out to you guys as soon as we have them on the schedule. All right, I think that's all we got. Let's go right into it. 2023, the vintage. It's what's going into bottling runs right now. We bottled up about 500-600 cases of 2023s for ourselves over the course of yesterday. Man, I was up bright. I mean, yeah, let me give you like the build up to this. Some of you who have been listening to for this for a while have you know, probably remember my bottling is the worst episode and why it's so annoying and why us winemakers hate it, even though it is, you know, kind of the end of, and you get to kind of put this great wine together finally and, you know, finish it. There is something nice about that, but it is really long days. When you're sick like I was, it doesn't make it any easier, of course, but you gotta get it done. Last Wednesday, just about a week ago, I spent, you know, probably about 13 hours just moving barrels around, you know, with a forklift, with a hand truck, and just rolling them around. We are pulling wine from all of our barrels, all of our different kegs. If you're following us on Instagram, you probably saw a little bit of those updates. And just moving everything down to the winery, which many of you have been out to the winery. I know some of you have not. You know, it's about, you know, a couple hundred yards from the cave system to where we store our barrels all the way down to the winery where we do the bottling. So I'm doing just basically four barrels or so at a time You know, running them, you know, filling up a tank, running it down to the winery, emptying it, running it back up, filling it up, running it back, just running laps up and down the property. It was a long day. Then we got to, you know, rinse and steam clean all the barrels, get them stacked up, try and, you know, clean as we go, like a good, you know, a good cook in the kitchen. You're cleaning as you go, as you're making wine as well. We are glorified janitors after all. Thursday came filtering, which is we don't really filter a lot of our wines. Our white wines and our Diversum red wine are really the only wines that we do filter using a cross flow technology. We're making some wine for some clients, so we did filter that as well. That was a like 16-17 hour day because it took way longer than I thought it was going to. These wines were really, really turbid. As it turned out, the filter was going really, really slow. We had to clean it and flush it a couple of times. It was just a bear getting wine through this filter. And I was really under the weather on Thursday, which was, I guess, kind of nice. It was like, go pick up the machine first thing in the morning in Napa, run back up to the winery, which is about a 45-minute drive, get it plugged in, get it rinsed, ready to go. And then you just sit there and you watch the wine go by and you hope that it doesn't plug up or break or do anything. And nothing like that happened. It was relatively easy work. You're just sitting there babysitting the wine and watching it go by for the better part of, yeah, what was it, 16, 17 hours by the time I was done with it. It was dumb. I probably could have split it up into 2 days. I probably should have. But I just, you know, I felt so under the weather. I'm like, I'd rather just get it done. So instead of turning it off at, you know, 6 or 7 at night when I still had a little bit to go, I'm like, I got 3 more hours in me. Let's just get it done, you know. That way I actually was able to go return that machine Friday morning. Friday, I don't even remember what I did Friday. It was a lot more cleanup, getting the cellar all, you know, tidied up, things organized, cleaned, and like ready to go. The bottling truck, big shout out to our main man, Chris, with Ultima Bottling, who came out and got everything set up on Friday. So we were helping make sure that he had everything he needed. We had all of our equipment ready to go that way because we were bottling, you know, Monday starting at 8 a.m. So we just, you know, you got to be prepared for it before the weekend gets started. There was a little bit more work to do both on Saturday and Sunday in regards to like hosting tastings. Big fun actually with the tasting groups we saw over the weekend. Thank you guys so much for coming out. If you're listening, love you guys. It was a blast. We had our annual 30-year party. Some of you remember some of those stories. We'll get into that. We'll get into that for sure in this episode. And then, you know, we get through the weekend. Bottling yesterday. Oh, I got to tell you, like even though being a little under the weather, I was still able to taste wine. My sniffer wasn't completely plugged up, so that was nice. That was a huge benefit. Let me go. Hold on. I got to pause real quick. Time out. I got to go turn off the AC because it, maybe not. Maybe you guys can hear it. Maybe you won't. Every time it kicks on, I kind of think that my microphone's going to pick it up and it's going to sound like static in the background, but I'm just going to run with it this time. I got distracted. I'm already a space cadet because I'm so tired. But we're going to keep forging ahead. We're going to keep forging ahead. Anyway. All right. So we had the 30-year party. Sunday recovery day, hosted a tasting, double checked everything, tasted all of our blends, made sure they were good. Everything was great. Monday morning comes, it's 3:30 in the morning. I'm up, you know, getting our coffee going, getting ready, and I'm out at the winery by 4:30 or so because we got some large formats to do. We're going to hook up to the first tank. We're going to get the truck all set up and ready to go. You know, it's actually a pretty nice, quiet, easygoing morning into bottling because as long as you're set up and everything's like where it's supposed to be, you can just like get there, knock it out, get the job done. So wine started going into the bottling truck. We started bottling at basically 8 a.m. sharp when we finished at like 3:30, like a clean full day of bottling. I thought about it mid-run too as we're probably like two-thirds through this bottling run. Excuse me there. And I'm thinking, I'm like, it's going so well. It's been so easy. And you know you don't say it. You can't say it. You can barely think it. It's like a pitcher going for a perfect game. You don't look at him. You don't talk to him. You don't say anything. You just keep your head down. Keep your thoughts to yourself. And that's what you do when you're bottling and things are going well is you shut the fuck up and you just get the work done. Because the second you're like, man, this is going really well, something is going to go completely wrong. It happens every time. It's Murphy's Law. It's the way it goes, you know, bottling. And the second it goes well, you have to pretend like not to notice it. You need to pretend you're stressed. That way the good juju continues. We bottled all that wine yesterday. No problems. Got it up into the cave before it heads to our warehouse. And like the 23s are beautiful, you guys. I know some of you are excited for them. There's a lot of hype behind 2023, despite it being a really cold vintage, kind of much colder than the average. The wines are very structured, very high acid, very bright, perfect for kind of the style that I love to make. They are gorgeous. I cannot wait to start releasing the 2023s into next year. They're going to be outrageously good. You know, it's going to be interesting coming off of 2022, such a ripe, intense vintage because of that heat wave we had, going back to one of the most restrained and kind of like, I would say, balanced vintages for us that we've ever had. Like, just out, it's going to be kind of a weird dichotomy between these two years that we're going to be releasing back to back. But man, the wines are awesome. Yeah, it's killer, just absolutely killer. How to get all this done and make sure that these wines are, you know, where they ought to be. Very thankful that this bottling went off without a hitch. Very bummed that I was under the weather and we didn't do a proper, like, 2020, you know, this quick bottling recap of what we had going on last week. But there you go. That's bottling in a nutshell for you. That's, you know, roughly eight minutes of bottling action. And you can probably hear how stuffed up I am and how I'm stumbling over words because the level of exhaustion is just unmatched right now. I took a 2-hour nap. It's 7 p.m. I took a 2-hour nap from like 2 to 4 today because I was just toast. I had another like 4-6 hours of work to do at the winery this morning. Again, just cleaning things, moving things around, inventorying things, all the administrative stuff to make sure we got all of our counts and stuff going the right way for government reporting and taxes and all the, you know, all of it. That was all done today, and I think going into tomorrow, Wednesday, if you're listening to this on Wednesday today, you know, it'll be a little easier going. We'll have to dot some I's, cross some T's, get some stuff done, but looking good. Man, the 23s are killer. They're just so good. All the wines. When we tasted them before we bottled them, it was like, oh, these are going to be a thing. I don't know if it's vintage of the decade, but it's 2021 is kind of my front runner still. 23 could get there. When they start getting released, they might be surpassing the 21s. They're in a beautiful spot. All right, let's get into what I think most of you had really latched onto. We got some text messages, emails, some people slid into our DMs about this winery experience thing we were talking about. You know, and how, you know, we talked about this 2 weeks ago, I guess, that like winery experiences have just gone too far, right? That, you know, they're too expensive, they're too involved. You know, we don't need a Michelin star experience every time we go to sit at a winery and drink wine. Like, sometimes we just want to hang out and get to know the people and drink good wine and hopefully get to know it a little bit better. And this was also kind of like echoed in the 30-year party that I mentioned. You know, I was talking to some industry friends that were there, and this made me feel kind of bad, but maybe this is kind of the problem, you know, because there's someone there that I love, I respect. There's plenty of people that I know that have this opinion when it comes to like a sales mentality. And I have to be PC about this, you guys. I can't call anybody out for this because it could cause problems. But I'm going to basically, you know, tell you what kind of the opinion of some of these folks are in the industry here. Behind closed doors, this is what they say. You know, it's been a slow year, keep in mind. The hospitality's been down in terms of like tourism and stuff like that. It still is, so we're working through that. And there was someone that was talking about, you know, like, I've been so busy and I try and host groups when I can. You know, but we got to sell wine. You know, if you're going to come up and not buy cases, I'm really not interested in hosting people. You know, you can't just come up and taste. That's not what this is about. Like, you need to come up and be buying six packs. Like, I'm not going to open up the entire property and do a tour for one group if I'm not going to sell a bunch of wine. Like, it just doesn't make sense, you know. And as they were saying that, I was just like, man, that's the problem, though. Like, that's part of the problem, is that the assumption and kind of what's been baked into salespeople and the sales goals and kind of the demands of some of these businesses to perform and sell wine in the market that we've had for the last 13 years before this downturn, was that we're growing double digits every single year. And you have now a layer of people. There's another buddy of mine who is hiring, and they're looking to fill a hospitality position and, for wine sales. Right. And he said, well, I can't hire, we can't hire this person. We can't hire this person because they don't have a list. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, a list of people to sell to. Like, if you can't come in and sell a few hundred thousand dollars the second you get here, you can't work here. Now, I guess I can see, that's obviously important, right? Is you got to be able to show up to a job and perform. If you're a salesperson, you want to put yourself in a position where you can sell the most possible so you can get your...
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Commission, and you can do that, this and the other thing. If you are, I can speak from experience that when you have one tasting group that day, it's going to take you a few hours, maybe half a day when it's all said and done between setup, hosting, and breakdown to host that group. And if you don't sell a lot of wine, yeah, it kind of feels like a bummer. But this winery experience, like Woe's thing we were talking about, and why Napa just doesn't seem to have like this added value right now. I think this is kind of the problem. It's this gray area where I think some people in the industry and some businesses within this industry have pushed a little too far when it comes to the demands of their salespeople. Now, you still have to get the business to be profitable, right? Like if in some of these, like one of them that I mentioned, in fact, both of them are not doing particularly well financially based on what I know. So that being the case, I guess I understand where they're coming from. They're, these employees are frustrated. These friends of mine are frustrated because they're not selling enough wine. They're not hitting goals. That impacts their bottom line from a commission standpoint. They don't want to waste their time with people who are only going to buy a bottle here, a bottle there. They need people buying cases. Okay, I get the frustration. I get it. I totally get it. I think any one of us in a professional setting, no matter what the industry is, you don't like it when you're working with a client and they're kind of beating around the bush and hemming and hawing. It's like, let's get the deal done. I don't care what industry you're in. It's like, let's make this happen or not so that we can move on and get things going. The unique thing about a consumer good industry, like the wine industry, where you're trying to, entice people to, buy your high-end product, is that they don't need it, right? And some of us, obviously, being a little joking here, all of us probably listening to this show, and myself included, believe you need wine. This is why I have a glass of Mourvèdre sitting right here next to me that I'm going to take a sip of. I believe wine's an essential part of life. I just do. But, when it comes down to it, if all the wine tomorrow evaporated and there was no more wine left in the world, life would go on. We would all be very, very sad, but life would go on. And when you are in a down market, sales are hard to come by, and it's tough financially, it probably behooves you to at least bait the hook with whoever you can get, bringing in whoever you can get through the door. because you might sell one bottle, you might sell one case, you might sell 10 cases. You never know until you sit down with that person and you figure out which way is up. That's the reality. And this is the way I look at it. And this is the way I learned to look at it, because I used to be one of those salespeople working for commission and trying to fight, scratch, and claw for people to buy cases and cases and cases of wine. And after going out on my own, this is what I started to understand, especially not even just when the market's bad and you're having a hard time selling wine, but even when the market's great and someone comes in and buys a couple of bottles or a bottle, or even, I'll put it this way, even just comes in and pays tasting fees, buys no wine, but just pays for the tasting fees. Because this is a great example, actually, that popped up over the last week. Is that you never know in this hospitality industry, especially in a hospitality industry like this, where there's a real sales component to it. It's not just sitting at a restaurant and serving somebody. You're actively trying to sell a product, right? You never know how that experience is going to impact that person in front of you and how it could pay dividends down the road. Case in point here, the example I wanted to mention, is I get a phone call from a gentleman out in Texas. He's coming to Napa, wants to book a tasting with us. Naturally, one of my kind of questions is like, oh, well, like we're kind of a small random brand that no one really knows about. You know, how did you hear about it? Like, he's not in our customer database. He's not in our wine club. You know, there's no one with his last name in our database or in our wine club. So I'm just like, okay, well, this is kind of weird. And sure enough, he goes, oh, we had a friend of ours that was out there. They sat down, had an amazing tasting with you in the cave. They've been talking about it for 2 years. We said, we're planning a trip to Napa. They said, you got to go see Mike. And I said, hell yeah. That's outstanding. I'm going to have to write them a thank you card because that means the world to me. And it's that grassroots, like OG viral marketing. And I think there's a certain layer of people in the industry that maybe they're not actively trying to discount it and put no value in it, but they're having a tough time understanding how much of a long game this industry really is. And one of the reasons why I think brands are successful in the wine industry is because they look at that long game, almost like a generational long game, not just a 5 or 10 year plan. We're talking like you've got a third generation that's going to show up at some point, and in 30 years, you will have passed the torch a couple of times, maybe at least once, and you're going to have to think about that. That's really... honestly, if you're not thinking about your wine business in those terms, at least a little bit, you probably need to do so. Obviously, you're going to have to worry about your short-term budget and goals and all the normal business stuff that happens year in, year out, quarter in, quarter out, whatever. Like, that's fine. But for the love of God, stop acting as though, you know, this is going to be like some amazing new thing, you know, that just continues to grow unmitigated, you know, like the wine industry has from 2011 through basically 2022, 2023. It was, you know, these conversations I had with these, you know, colleagues and good friends of mine was a little disheartening because I kind of forgot that people think that way in certain circles out here. And when we were talking about kind of these winery experiences and they're all dialed to the nines and they're high ticket value. And on top of that, the expectation, not just the hope, but the expectation is that you, the consumer, are going to pay $125, $150 for an experience, and you're going to buy a few cases of wine on top of that. That's the expectation for many places around here. In fact, there are places that are, you know, instituting purchase minimums, maybe not so much anymore, but there are plenty that were before, you know, this, you know, market started to take a downturn on us. And my question, you know, from there and kind of a part of this, you know, winery experience thing and what is, you know, I think plaguing the industry right now is that Napa really doesn't have a lot of like added value, right? I mean, shoot, this Mouvedre that's in my glass right now, good old Texas High Plains Mouvedre from a very good buddy of ours, shout out to Austin and Katie, who actually just sold this business called Nobleman Wines. They were making this out in Kerrville, Texas for some time before selling it this year to move on to bigger and better things. But wanted to drink something, you know, that I respected and appreciated and, you know, frankly, enjoy. This actually reminds me a lot of our Pinot Noir. But, which is kind of weird, but I like it. I like it a lot. Now, what do I mean by, like, no value add? Like, what's the value? I mean, obviously you'd think, like, okay, Napa has value. It's very pretty, creates great memories. You get to meet cool people, eat great food. You know, there's certainly a monetary value to planning a trip and coming out here and buying stuff and joining wine clubs and all that. But going back to kind of my facetious point of, you know, if all wine disappeared tomorrow, life would go on. You know, if Napa and the industry here disappeared tomorrow, life would go on. A lot of us would have to figure out new things to do with our lives. But the reality is that life would go on. And anecdotally, you know, we've talked about this in the past over, you know, many episodes, talking about kind of the current state of the industry and where it is that, you know, there's not a great positive vibe about Napa right now around the country. At least it doesn't seem like it. And we're talking about some smaller markets. You know, we're not talking about your New Yorks and LAs and Chicagos necessarily. And don't get us wrong. I mean, there are plenty of you out there that are big supporters of Napa, love Napa wines, want to continue supporting Napa as a place and as an industry and all that, which we can't thank you enough for. But I truly believe, number one, consumers, all of you lovely people out there, are incredibly intelligent people. You know when bullshit's being shoveled in your face. And when you have salespeople doing just that, and maybe not giving you that value because you're not buying enough, you're not earning it from them, I think that's the problem. I think that's that might be kind of the crack in the armor right now for Napa. Is that the expectations have gotten so out of whack that, you know, the value has to be earned. You're not going to see us necessarily be able to, you know, give you a bunch of discounts and free shipping and free events and this, then fly out here and do this. Some of it does have to be earned, right? Like, you know, if you're in a wine club for X amount of time, or you hit a certain like purchase history or minimum, then it's like, okay, like certain, there are perks that come along with that, right? It's like earning points on a credit card. You know, typically the more you spend, the more points you get and the more you can redeem for whatever you need it for, right? Like same idea, like you got to earn it a little bit. But it feels as though the barrier to that value now is so high. It's like, how the hell do we get over it? And I think, and maybe I'm speaking out of turn, but that kind of feels a lot like, that seems to be kind of an ongoing theme of what some of you brought up after that winery experience thing and, you know, kind of a lack of connection to certain wineries and certain brands out here. That seems to be, I think, a fairly reasonable assessment that just Napa, realistically, what is the value of Napa to you, the wine buyer? What is it? Is it just bragging rights? Hey, here's this expensive thing that I can buy and you should enjoy it because it's this, you know, expensive bottle of wine. Is that it? Is it like looking at a Rolex or a Goyard or a Lamborghini and saying like, oh, look at insert consumer good here. It's really expensive. You should appreciate it. Is that enough? No, obviously I'm joking. Like that's definitely not enough. For some people it is. Listen, if that's how you find value in things is finding the most expensivest, like 2 chains, then go for it. All right. That's fine. Do it. That's a great show, by the way. If you haven't ever looked up most expensivest, there's actually an episode with Harlan Estate on it. You should definitely check it out. It's really interesting. It's very entertaining. At least I found it hilarious. Anyway, you know, we had some, on Saturday, we had some amazing club members and not just club members, but friends out from Dallas. the Dallas area. Shout out to Carrie and Sean and you guys bringing some friends out to introduce, you know, our wines to them. And, you know, they kind of said it on their way out. These are kind of the biggest compliments, and it means the world to me when I hear it, is that, you know, we actually get to sit here with you and not just like, we've been to Napa a bunch of times. We know the sales pitches. We know some of the history. We know how important the soil and the weather is. Like, that's all great. And if we want to know more, we'll ask. We just kind of want to hang out, get to know people, get to know the wines, the person behind the wines, and connect. Like, we want this to be more than just this transactional, hey, welcome to such and such winery. Have you been here before? Well, let us tell you about our amazing estate and why we use the most premier things and who the family is. And our owners are very passionate about wine and started this back in the day. And it's like, okay, like, we get it. We understand. What else? Like, where's the heart? Where's the soul? Where's the authenticity? That's kind of the big buzzword right now, is authenticity, right? And it seems as though more and more people are looking at that, and kind of that's starting to creep up in terms of importance when it comes to value, right? Is how much connectivity do, like, we as consumers have to a certain thing? Would I drink Texas High Plains Mourvedre if a friend of mine didn't make it? Probably not. I probably wouldn't even go to Hill Country if I didn't have a friend there making wine. That's the reality. But I did. He's a good dude. One of my best friends. Love his wife. They're amazing people. Love their just extended family in general. They're great people. And we wanted to support him as, you know, as little as we could. And it's good juice. And I hope that the new owners continue that, you know. But there is a connection here. And that's important to me. Now, whether it's someone who owns and is running the business or it's someone that just works there, if we have friends there and we feel connection and the wine is good and we've had good experiences with them and their colleagues and whatnot, then it's like, yeah, awesome. This is great. You know, there's some value to that. And I feel as though maybe that's been like discounted or just kind of set aside for a few years now. And people started to lean on this, hey, this experience, this, and kind of the grandeur of this place and the opportunity to buy our wines and the opportunity to taste here with us at some of these kind of highfalutin properties. They assumed that that was the value. Like, this is the value we're providing, is an experience and wines unlike any other. And then you realize you have like 2,000 brands all around you that are doing the same shit. And all of a sudden, that really special thing you were doing isn't actually that special anymore. Because everyone's doing it. It's not unique. It's not interesting even necessarily, right? This is why I've been saying this for years. Like, the exclusivity thing is dead. If you're trying to do the exclusivity thing, you know, that's a tough gig right now, because you can go and buy any high-end wine you've ever wanted online right now. Just go to winebid.com. You'll find it, most likely. You're going to have to get it secondhand, but you can still get it. You don't have to wait on Screaming Eagle's list to get what you want. You can just go online and buy it, okay? Like, this is not we've said this before, right? This is nothing new. So why do we think that that is adding value, that these opportunities to buy and experience are the value that this place needs? And I think that's a big part of this gut check for this industry, is you have a lot of people that have been very passionate about wine or have been new to wine over the last 10, 12 years, who have been very excited to try new places and get into new experiences and like check them out. And now that that's been happening, it's kind of like, well, it's like, well, yeah, the hand scanner in your cellar is cool. It's very James Bond, but that's totally unnecessary. Like, you don't. Like, that's a cool toy, but that costs, you know, a lot of money. Like, so you've got a lot of commas in your bank account. Great. You like toys. I love toys. There's Legos behind me over here. You can see, if you're watching, you can see the figurines on the top of my, you know, desktop computer here. Like, I love my toys, right? because I'm a nerd, and this is what we do. But none of that actually provide value add to like that. Does that add value to the brand and the customer experience? Maybe someone really geeks out about it. I'm sure there's always something there for everybody. But, you know, yeah, I don't know. I think this is going to be an ongoing conversation now that we're kind of working our way through these rough waters and we're having some more of these conversations and getting more direct feedback about what you, the consumer, actually wants to experience from these wineries and from these places that we own or manage or sell wine for. You know, these are important things to say. It was interesting, kind of like tying into this. There was a new podcast that I started listening to called What's the Problem? And this was through Eller's Estate, which some of you are probably familiar with. I love their wines. I've been drinking them for a long time. I cannot remember the host's name. Ugh. I should have done. This is what happens when I ad lib. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can find it. But the reason why it caught my attention was because they're going through, and I'm actually going to kind of one of their Eller's like live events next week, actually, or the week after, something like that. And it is they're just interviewing everybody, just absolutely everybody. Let me see if I can find it. It doesn't actually say who hosts it. On the latest episode, it was Michael Osborne, which was really cool. Let's see if it's on the Substack. Nope. Anyway, look up What's the Problem. There's a picture of a puppy, like a dog, on the cover. I don't know if you can see it. Anyway. But there was an episode with Heidi Barrett, Michelle Rolland, and I listened to both the Michelle Rolland and the Heidi Barrett episodes so far. I'm trying to play a lot of catch up with it. But they got on the topic, interestingly enough, of entry-level wines. And Michelle Rolland, obviously, if you know who he is, he's one of one of the most iconic wine consultants in the world. They were talking about entry-level wines. And they're like, well, Michelle was like, entry-level is not what I do. I make high-end wines. And it was like, yeah, of course, that makes sense. That's kind of your pedigree. Got it. But it kind of got me thinking, like as we were having all these conversations regarding, you know, Napa experiences, trying to find value and bring people back to the fold when it comes to visiting Napa, being out here and buying wine, you know, and then they said it during this interview that quality right now is not really the issue. Right now, you can find more high quality wine than ever before because of experience and technology. It's easier to make good wine now than it ever has been before. So why is it that we had, and this is the question that I immediately thought of, is like, okay, so why is it that we have such a hard time finding quality, kind of entry-level wines that are, even from Napa, a little bit more affordable, you know, instead of $125 for all your Cabernets, like, can you make one that's like around $60? Maybe? I don't know. Can you? Is that even possible in this market? Might be sooner rather than later if things continue to be on a downhill slide. But is that something that, you know, that Napa should be responsible for? Or should we lean on places like Texas or Paso Robles? And I'm not trying to, like, you know, poo-poo some of these places, you know. But you look at, you know, the Columbia Basin or in Washington State, you're like, okay, well, these wines are typically outside of like Kilcedar Creek. Like, there are some pretty affordable wines out here compared to Napa. Like, you can get Cabernet from outside of Napa in California. That's much more affordable in terms of the price. Can you find that value elsewhere and then just go big and go home when it's Napa? Or does Napa need to start to, you know, increase its reach in that sense as well? And kind of get back to like getting just wine on the table for people. Like, do we need to find, you know, of course, when it comes to like the value of like the experience and the connection and the value add that a brand has for you as a consumer, there also needs to be a monetary value. And with so many new people coming into the valley and starting wine brands over the last 15 years and just saying, all right, our cab starts at 125 or 185 or 225 or 325. It's like, okay, like that's fine. But is that, is just because it's expensive, does that make it worth it? For some people, sure. Like we were talking about, for some people, it's a money thing. And, you know, showing off how many commas you have in your bank account. Yeah, sure. But maybe part of a way through this, or to help kind of amend this issue that we're seeing, is having some of these, you know, entry-ish level wines. I mean, you do have to find way. Now, here's the rub, is that for those of you that love a big, sexy Napa cab, guess what? You can't make big, sexy Napa cab without cheaply. Unless you're using a shit ton of additives and other stuff, which if you're okay with that, cool. Like, you know, I love a Big Mac and hot Cheetos. Like, they're delicious. So if you don't mind something that's been doctored up and heavily processed, fine. Or the wine needs to be made in a fairly different style, okay? You know, you're not going to be able to buy a brand new French oak barrels to make that kind of Cabernet. You're just not. If you're trying to make a value-oriented wine, there are going to be certain things you just cannot do. You might not be able to age it for 2 years. Because I can tell you this, when we go from aging a wine, and I know this because I've done the math in a spreadsheet, is that when we go from, like, for our production, aging a wine for 1 year versus 2 years, the price isn't just like double. It's actually 3x. Because you have less inventory that's being aged for that long. So you're spending more time on less inventory versus bottling a lot of our whites and other stuff. That's kind of like the gist of it. I probably said that wrong. There's an accountant out there that's gonna be like, that's not right. I don't care. I know what I mean. I think you got the point. It's really expensive to age things for a long time, especially when you're buying new barrels. So can you age something for like a year, 8 months, 6 months, and get it out the door and reduce the cost of labor involved with it? Can you reduce the cost of materials in terms of barrels? Can you buy wine or grapes in bulk and get a good deal from your grower and say, hey, instead of paying what is the average price, can we knock $500 off of it, $1,000 off of it, and go from there? Like, is there potential to do that? And right now, given the state of the industry, there might be a lot of great potential to do stuff like that. I don't know. It got my noodle really noodling up top over the last couple of weeks. I have loved listening to that podcast. The Roland interview is great. The Barrett, listen to Heidi's amazing because she's such a talent. There's a bunch of others. Those are the big names, obviously, but there's a lot of other big names. So if you're into wine podcasts and actually like hearing stuff from like the source, they're doing a great job. And I'll report back after this little seminar/talk that I go to with them next week because it's going to be cool. I'm very excited for it. All right, I think I'm beat. I got to tell you, I'm going to go get some much-needed sleep. Again, thank you guys so much for tuning in. You're all the best. Very excited to start sharing these 2023s with you all. I can't believe we got through bottling unscathed. Even though I was sick, doesn't matter. We got through it and everything went amazing, so I'm here for it. It's going to be killer. Please, for those of you that chimed in regarding like the winery experiences and the kind of this Napa and finding value in Napa, again, both from a kind of a connection and authenticity standpoint, but also maybe a pricing standpoint, we got to continue that conversation for sure. I think it's going to be really, really worthwhile. You all have an amazing rest of your day, week. We are going camping this weekend, so I'm going to be off the grid, so don't try and get a hold of me. unless something's burning down. We are going to be off the grid to getting some much-needed R&R starting Thursday night. So we're going to go out to the Russian River for a nice long weekend. It's going to be a blast. So we will be back next week. We're going to try and kick off August in a very feisty way. We got some new stuff coming down the pipeline from Napa County. Wine ratings and reviews. An amazing quote that I heard from somebody that I hadn't heard in a while. That's your teaser for next week. We're getting into some drama, and it's going to be a feisty one to kick off the month of August. You guys all take care. Love you. Mean it. This has been the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9-1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.